On today's episode of Hoops 360, March Madness continues. We'll react to the biggest moments from the first two rounds of the tournament. Plus, we'll preview the most anticipated Sweet 16 matchups and give you some of our spicy and bold predictions and what to watch in the Sweet 16. What's up, everybody? Welcome into Hoops 360. No idea what day it is. No idea when was the last time I ate something green, when was the last time I had 8 hours of sleep, but it doesn't matter because we sleep in April, okay? Now we're in the thick of March Madness. She's Ice Young. I'm Caroline Fenton. Cassandra Negley is normally here with us on the pod, but she has been grinding out great, great articles for all of you to read on sportsyahoo.com, so make sure to check those out. On today's episode of Hoops 360, we've got takeaways from the round of 64 and the round of 32, and we'll also look ahead to the Sweet 16, things that we are looking for, things that we think you should keep an eye out for. So let's get into it, Ice. I just want to go ahead and kick us off. First of all, great to see you.
You too.
Hope you're doing great.
You
too. We're matching. We didn't even plan it.
We're kind of twinning. Yes, at 11 p.m. Love this for us.
11 p.m., black was the only vibe that we could go for. I was like, that's the first t-shirt that I can see in my drawer, and that's the first thing that I'm going to grab. Today's not a day for being a fashionista, and that's okay. Want to take a dive into first my biggest takeaway, or one of my biggest takeaways from the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. And we got so many great games. We have a Cinderella, dare I say, a Cinderella heading to the Sweet 16. We'll get into all of that. But I want to touch on a viral moment that we saw absolutely spread like wildfire on social media. And that was Brenda Freeze, Maryland head coach, with her star player, Maryland's leading scorer, Alucia Conowa, and Maryland's matchup with North Carolina in the round of 32. And Brenda Freeze, it was the video that went viral, was Brenda Freeze. She's expressive. She's yelling. She's pointing. She's kind of touching Alucia in the chest, very clearly coaching her up in the last few minutes and last few seconds of that game. That went like crazy. That went viral to the point that Brenda Freeze addressed it in a post-game press conference. Alucia Conowa has addressed it as well. Ice, you've lived this. You've been there as a player, as somebody who lives, eats, and breathes this game. What was your takeaway and your impression of that interaction?
I loved it. You know, this time of year, everyone has a lot on the line. Coaches have legacy on the line. Players have legacy and their careers on the line. And we're all trying to win. And so what you saw was a coach that was trying to will her best player on the court to get her team to victory. I felt like the finger pointing was kind of an ownership moment. You know, you could read her lips as you see some of the clips surface on social media of Brenda Free saying to Alucci, "I believe in you." You know, there is nothing more important, I think, as an important player, a contributor on a team, to play for a coach that believes in you and that motivates you in that way. And we've seen different coaches across landscapes motivate players in different ways, sometimes embarrassing, sometimes really mean and really harsh. That didn't feel like that to me. That felt like a moment in which she was coaching her player hard that we heard from later also wants to be coached hard. And I love that Alucci said that. No surprise, though, if you watch that young lady play basketball, she plays at 110%. But to me, it was one of the best moments of March, you know, where it kind of shows the desperation in needing to win and where coaches feel like they can meet players to get them over the hump. And what happened after she went and talked to Alucci? Balled out. Immediately got a bucket and was making plays and trying to be the X factor for Maryland. So she certainly motivated her player. But to me, it's a pressure. It's a privilege to be coached hard, to know that you can take it and to know that someone cares that much. And also knowing Brenda Freeze, that is Brenda Freeze. Brenda Freeze is an intense, coach you up, encouraging, animated, empowering coach. She has been that the entirety of her career. So if you know her, there wasn't even a thought in my mind that this was a negative moment. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, no, she's trying to empower her player.
I was kind of shocked that it spread as much as it did.
In a negative way, right?
In a negative, as divisive as it was, as controversial as it was. Because I'm with you, Ice. I saw that and I was like, that's a player getting coached by their coach. Yes. And Aluchi even came out after the game and was like, I wanted to be coached hard. I asked to be coached hard. I came to Maryland to be coached hard. You know, very similarly, there were some clips that went viral of Carol Lawson in a post-game press conference, and a lot of people were commenting on her intensity. Well, yeah, like that's who she is. Like, yeah. Do you not think that Toby Fournier and every single other player in that Duke locker room didn't know what they were signing up for? Mm. Do you think Aluchi Okonawa committed to Maryland not knowing what she was signing up for? Do you think Flauje Johnson committed to LSU and thinking, like, I'm looking for a super chill, low-key head coach?
Low-key.
Like, these players know what they need, and that is why they play for these head coaches. So that's 1,000%. One thing. It's like, why are we surprised by this? This is, you would think, in theory, a coach knows what a player needs, and a player asks for what they know they need to get motivated in these biggest moments.
Yes. I think we're surprised, or those that were surprised, are because they don't know our game. Because I think I'd be hard-pressed to find 10 people who know Brenda Freeze and who she is and could play that clip and felt like she was doing the opposite of what we know her to do. So I just felt like those that were surprised is because maybe you're new here. And so, you know, it's okay. It's your first run-in with Brenda Freeze. Don't judge. Pay attention to the rest of the – read the room, as they say. Read the Twitter room. And then you'll understand what one of the best coaches in women's basketball at the collegiate level does, then you'll understand the standard. Maybe. I don't know.
I shouldn't be shocked, but yet I am.
Yeah.
I feel like year over year, we get certain tournament viral moments that remind me that there are so many people out there that think that women's basketball is a tea party. That everyone is going out there and it's all like lovey-dovey, all sunshine. These are athletes. These are competitors. Like, there is a certain level of intensity that is expected when you are a competitor at the highest level of what you do. 100%. And I think I get frustrated just talking about it because we saw a matchup between Mick Cronin at UCLA and Danny Hurley at UConn, and mm-hmm. we saw back-to-back clips of them telling them to, like, for their players to get the F over here. And they're screaming. Their veins are popping out. Their faces are reaching a shade of red that I didn't even know was humanly possible. And yet the rhetoric is, oh, that's just Dan Hurley being Dan Hurley. Oh, Mick Cronin, he's so funny. They're such intense coaches. They're almost like memes. They're almost caricatures of themselves because we're so accustomed to those coaches coaching at such an intense and high level. But you go to the women's side and all of a sudden it's controversial.
Yeah.
All of a sudden we're nitpicking and we're all unprofessional lip readers on social media. 100%. It's frustrating. I don't know why we do this. Let this be a reminder that all of these coaches and all of these players are out here for the same prerogative and the same goal that the men are and every player and every athlete in any other sport are, and that's to win a championship.
Amen. Literally, amen. I said the immediate same. I've been covering the men's tournament almost more than the women's, and I'm like, nobody would have said anything if that was Tom Izzo and Jeremy Fierce Jr. In fact, the commentators would have been like, oh, he's coaching them hard. That's what you got to do with point guards this time of year. But instead, we didn't. I can't say we because I'm aside from the we who were surprised and on the other side. Y'all are over there on the other side of the line, very far from me.
You're on an island.
But for those of us who knew, shout out to those of us who knew and spoke about it and supported that moment. Because again, it's one of the beautiful moments that we experienced in March that I'm glad we acknowledged. But you said it great, sister girl. You said it great.
Thank you. Everybody, just let's take a chill pill a little bit.
Touch a little grass. Touch grass.
Touch grass. Everything's going to be fine. That was one of my biggest takeaways, or at least biggest moments I felt like from the first couple of rounds of the women's tournament. What about you? One of your biggest takeaways?
Woo! Well, you know I'm a sucker for buzzer beaters. And especially ones where you're at home as a senior playing your last game in your home arena and you're a Maya Battle for Minnesota and you are battling a number 5 seeded Ole Miss. You're the 4 seed expected to win. You've got the ball with less than 3 seconds left and you catch, take 2 dribbles, step back and drain a game winner. Oh my goodness. I was watching this game screaming at my TV. You know, Ole Miss for the majority of the game was leading. They had the momentum. And then 5 minutes left in the game, Cody McMahon fouls out, who has had a terrific college basketball career. I think we are going to miss watching someone as powerful and dynamic as Cody McMahon. But she fouled out for Ole Miss, and Minnesota were like sharks that smell blood in the water. They were like, we can win this. And Amaya Battle's step back game winner was just like chef's kiss. Like, it was a mid-range. She lost her defender, but then they recovered. And it was just so beautiful. And you felt the crowd. Watching the game, you felt the crowd. And so to me, it was just, again, one of those moments of March where you're like, that's beautiful. Couldn't have drawn it up better myself.
It was so March.
So March.
It was everything that we love about March, everything that's beautiful about March. And then on the Ole Miss side of things, everything that could be so devastating about March when you snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And if you just look at the numbers, Ole Miss should have won that game in every statistical category. I mean, Ole Miss had a lead for more than half of the game. Ole Miss had an 8-point lead midway through the fourth quarter. But to your point, Minnesota just found the teeniest, tiniest little crack and they took advantage of it. And it was awesome. The shot went in and the place went absolutely wild. You know, we talk about how beautiful moments in March are. I think that's compounded in the women's side of things when you get these home environments. Mm. And I did wonder, I know we've talked on the show, you can find our last podcast wherever you get your podcasts and on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. We talked so much about how important that home court advantage is. You're sleeping in your own bed. You're going through your normal routine. You're eating in your own kitchen. Just everything is the same. And of course, you have your home fans in front of you as well. Does that game go differently if it's not in Minnesota? If it's at a neutral site, if it's in Oxford, Mississippi, if it's in Fort Worth, if it's in Sacramento, if it's wherever, does that outcome look different?
Probably. I'm not going to sit here and say that having a home court advantage isn't an advantage, you know?
Right.
Especially with some of the programs that have home court advantages, like a Minnesota, that is women's basketball country up there with the Gophers. And so they packed the house. It was loud in there. It was rocking. I love the environment. And so I definitely believe that that helped. Now, listen, is Amaya Battle more than capable of making a 2-dribble step back jumper for a game winner? Absolutely. But does the game flow that the way it does once Cody McMahon subs out the game and you feel like the crowd is on your side? Then I'm not so sure. And so it's interesting. And when you're at a neutral site, which is what we're obviously going to see next in the Sweet 16, sometimes you've got to manufacture your own energy because maybe fans couldn't travel or they're not enough where they feel like the sixth man and they're really making a difference, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And that's, I think, you know, the fascinating thing is all teams are heading the road as we hit the Sweet 16, whether you're in Fort Worth or whether you're in Sacramento. Now, it does feel like a little bit more of an even playing field because we saw that go Minnesota's way, and then we saw the opposite. Mm-hmm. Iowa's home court advantage didn't seem to make a difference. You know, Virginia didn't seem to be overly fazed by playing in the Hawkeyes arena. Virginia becomes the first team to play in a first four game to get to the Sweet 16 in women's tournament history.
Come on, Virginia.
Virginia, a 10 seed heading to the Sweet 16. Dare I say we have a Cinderella?
We do. Oh, we do. The slipper is on. The slipper is on.
It's on. Whoever said Cinderellas are dead, you're just not paying attention. You're just not watching. You're not listening.
Here for March. Yeah.
You're not here for March. And you want the downfall of college sports to happen so bad, but it's not happening.
Yes.
That's a conversation for a different day. But now Virginia has been on the road for the last week. You know, they left Charlottesville. It took me a second to think of where Virginia is. Left Charlottesville on St. Patrick's Day. We're recording this podcast on March 23rd. They've been gone for a week. They're going to go back home, regroup, and then hit the road yet again. Notre Dame doing the same thing. Kentucky in the same situation. All outside of those top four seeds all have been on the road for the last week and some change. What does that mean for those teams as we head down the stretch?
You know, you got to be road warriors in March. Because at a certain point, like you just listed, everyone is on the road at a certain point. But to me, though, those teams, especially Virginia, obviously being a double digit and having to play an extra game than their opponents that they beat and knocked out. You in the first four, you got an extra game than everybody else. So you're winning three games in 5 days, right? Not two games in four. But the other part of it is the confidence you get from being a road warrior, especially a team like Notre Dame that was at Ohio State. I mean, the Buckeyes, I've done a game there. They pack that house. They care that they show up in their red, looking like the flooded gates. And for Notre Dame to get two wins there on the road, but especially in knocking out Ohio State, I feel like you go into the next round like, hey, we've been war warriors. We've done exactly what we needed to do. We've been able to take our game on the road and win through our identity. So I feel that you honestly have more confidence. And for a team like Notre Dame, they're a 6 seed this year. I mean, this is a program that's been to 5 straight Sweet 16s, and I would be betting to bet half my bank account that the last 4 they've hosted the first 2 rounds. This is probably uncharted territory for them at this point in the season to not be playing at home and to not have won those 2 games at home. So I feel like it gives more confidence for those teams who are kind of playing with house money. Now, can I say that Hannah Hidalgo is playing with house money? No, I cannot. No, I cannot. She's just not playing with anybody. Oh, my goodness. I don't know how I thought to even bet against her just a little bit and thinking that maybe Ohio State would have enough where Hannah could go and score 50 and they wouldn't be able to hold everyone else. But I love that Neil Ivey and Hannah Hidalgo have proved me wrong. I love that they're in their 5th straight Sweet 16. I think that's a great story there.
And it's going to be an absolute blast of a story to continue to watch. I do want to get into Notre Dame and their Sweet 16 matchup in just a minute. But you bring up what that can do for your confidence winning on the road. And I do think it can go one of two ways. And I do just think it depends. Like you bring up Notre Dame's mentality. Notre Dame has 2-3 seed expectations as a 6 seed. So you have those 6 seed almost like roadblocks and hurdles ahead of you, but the expectations aren't going anywhere.
Right.
A team like Virginia, I think that's the most playing with house money situation that we've seen in a long time. Because at this point, of course, they want to win games. And of course, the ultimate goal is a championship. But at this point, they didn't expect to be here.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, okay, you're playing free. You're playing with that level of confidence. What does that do for you versus fatigue is going to set in at some point? And I think it's fair to assume that if you've been on the road for the last week versus sleeping in your own bed for the last week, maybe that fatigue starts to set in a little bit sooner or a little bit earlier than some of the teams that you're going to be facing. Just in theory.
It's not in theory. It's definitely real. It's definitely real. You just gotta, you know, it's the other side of it is like, well, hey, if I slept in my bed and I wasn't playing, I'd be sad. But I'm not sleeping in my own bed and I get to play. But we'll get over it. You know, at the end of the day, you know, even if you have the season of your life, you still only got 2 more weeks in a hotel bed.
Yeah. I mean, we started off this podcast and we're just sitting up here and we're gabbing and we were talking about how we'll sleep in April.
Yes.
That's their mentality too. April they don't 7th, care how many hours of sleep they've gotten or how many miles they're racking up on their airline. Like they don't care about any of that. But, you know, home court advantage is obviously something that's unique to the women's game. I do want to hear from Virginia head coach Amaka Agogwa-Hamilton and her perspective of being one of those teams, the team that has, you know, gotten to wear the glass slipper in this postseason and what she thinks her team gains from winning these games on the road.
To win a game like this on an opponent's home court in front of this many fans who are that vocal, does that make the accomplishment, you know, feel even greater and more gratifying?
Iowa City, first of all, hospitality has been great. But the fans, they show up and show out. I think they've sold out like 50, 51 or 50 something straight games. And they make it a difficult environment to play in, but it's just an awesome environment. I think it's great for the game. It's great for women's basketball. And Iowa's always been a tough place to play. It's a great environment. I just think, you know, we need more of it, you know, and I love the fact that the people here support women's basketball in the way that they do. But yes, of course, winning a game in the front of a crowd like that, where we just had our little section of orange, is awesome, you know, and you got to be able to win on the road in March.
And that should be the message to the team, I think. You have to be able to win on the road in March if you want to win a championship. Well, they just won 3 games on the road in March. Yep. So, Ice, put yourself in the Virginia locker room right now. What are you feeling? What are the vibes? How can that propel them as they take on TCU in the Sweet 16?
Like you said, playing with house money. Come on, there's no pressure. You know, one, that you're playing your best basketball at this time of year, because that's what it takes to win a first four game, but also to follow it up and knock out 2-seed Iowa. I mean, I did not see Jan Jensen's squad not getting to a Sweet 16. I honestly felt like they had a favorable side as a 2-seed and where they were. And so when you knock out someone like that, a team that was the second best team in the Big Ten this season, I mean, you've got all the confidence in the world. I also believe, like, winning a game in double overtime, come on, you know, the resiliency, the weathering the storm, like the this is March. I would probably have a crazy chip on my shoulder walking into that TCU game, like, man, y'all ain't been through what we've been through. You know what I'm saying? We've done a little bit more up until this point. Now, to your point, will the extra game get to them? Will the emotions, the high emotions of them experiencing this thing for the first time possibly get to them? It's a TCU team that, yes, is making their second straight Sweet 16 appearance, but it's a completely new roster. The only thing that's been consistent is Mark Campbell, right? And so I'm interested to see if TCU can handle this, because you're dealing with a team that is absolutely ready to go, that has the belief factor, and it's more than the belief factor because they prove that they can knock out teams that were seeded higher than you. That is also a little scary going into this game. But shout out to Kamora Johnson. I mean, it's so hard for us to talk about all of the stars, right? Every team has a star, and they've got multiple stars and X factors. But Kamora Johnson, I've had the pleasure of watching this young lady play in person. The 28 games she scored to put Iowa away in double overtime, played every second of the game, 50 minutes she played. Did not foul out. In fact, scored 28 points and had 4 threes. Her leadership on the court through the clips that I've seen and watching her play is sensational. Like, I almost wish she was leading me in something. Like, let's go play pickup against some random dudes. And, like, you know, you be the team captain. Like, she just seems like she has the it factor. And you need that time of year, Caroline. We need it.
She's such a spark plug for that team.
Yes.
You could tell whenever Virginia, there were times in that game where I thought, okay, Virginia is starting to tuck their tail between their legs a little bit. Like, Virginia is starting to feel the pressure of, oh my gosh, we're about to do this. And it takes, one, a leader to be able to keep everyone refocused. And two, it takes a spark plug like Kamora Johnson was and has been for this Virginia team all season long to get everybody back on track and refocused. And I love her story, too. You know, she was a ball girl for Virginia growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
She committed to Virginia. It was her dream school growing up. Her mom loved Virginia. She was looking elsewhere when she was going through her recruitment. She ultimately decided on Virginia because she wanted to build a program at Virginia. That's not easy to do. You know, when you have offers from all over the country, when you're a 4-star, 5-star recruit, it would be really easy to go somewhere where the path to a championship is paved a little bit clearer. She decided to stay home. She decided to go somewhere where she could help build a program. And now here she is doing it. She got Virginia to their first Sweet 16 in more than 25 years. So I love to see that. Somebody who set out to do something, set out to seek a challenge, and now they're achieving it.
Can I also just say, too, this is Virginia, who had Dawn Staley and Tammy Reese, who went to 3 straight Final Fours and championships, I believe, Virginia. So there is a rich women's basketball history that for about 20 years had not been unlocked. And so really how special it is that she is bringing a place like this with such a big legacy back to the forefront. Like, I love this for her. And this is honestly why I support it when players don't choose the no-brainer school, you know, where there already been championships, where they decide to go somewhere and you make it that thing. And Kamora has made UVA that thing.
And it only takes one.
Only right? takes one. Like only takes
just,
one.
You just mentioned TCU's second consecutive trip to the Sweet 16. Well, it's their second ever. TCU does not have a rich history of women's basketball. UCLA, legitimate national championship contender for the last 2 years, has never won a national championship in its history. LSU, when I was at LSU, I covered women's basketball games because I love women's basketball, but that's because I love women's basketball. It wasn't what it is wasn't now. Good. The years of Sylvia Fowles were a long, long time ago. So all it takes is one special team. But Caleb Blake's at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt women's basketball wasn't really anything. It was an afterthought in the SEC.
Yeah.
Now, Vanderbilt's the fifth overall seed in the tournament. So it only takes one special player, a special coach, a special run, a special year to completely transform a program.
I cannot wait to watch some of these Sweet 16 games, Caroline. I feel like—
What do you have your eye on? What's the one that's most interesting?
Oh, so I was going
to
ask you first, because I feel like the basketball gods gave us some very good, intricate, hot, spicy gifts. So I'm going to ask you first, if you could only watch one game, you only get one of the Sweet 16, which game are you watching and why?
A little bit of a head pick, a little bit of a heart pick. You can see the helmet behind me. You know where my allegiance lies. But if I'm only going to watch one game, and I will take my purple and gold tinted glasses off, it's Duke LSU.
Yes.
Because it is unstoppable force versus immovable objects. Like, we get this Duke defense, this hard-nosed Duke defense that wants to play you in a phone booth against this LSU team that has one of the best backcourts in the country and that wants to score 90 to 100 points a game. We saw this rematch, or we saw this matchup in December, and LSU beat them handedly. But it feels like these are two very different teams now compared to what they were in December. I mean,
definitely.
LSU shot 60% from the field against Duke in that game. 60% from the field. We're talking about a Duke team that just held Charleston to 29% from the field. Like, we are talking about a Duke team that just held Baylor to 30% from the field, Louisville to 42% from the field in the ACC championship game. And while LSU's offense is going to be much higher powered than Baylor and Charleston, let's not get that twisted. This is a Duke team that's playing far better defense, that's playing just better all overall and playing way more consistent basketball now than when they were just trying to figure things out early in the season. And I think that this is an LSU team that's also playing better defensively. I mean, LSU is averaging what they're giving up on average about 60 points per game since they gave up or they allowed Duke to shoot 50% from the field back in December. So two teams that I think are playing their best brands of basketball right now in a clash that might look wildly different than we saw a couple months ago.
Definitely. I think Duke is a team that made maybe 160 degree turn since then. You know, they were starting to figure it out and it was a tough non-conference for them, but they challenged themselves, which is what you do if you care to get better. If you care to get better, you challenge yourself in the non-conference to figure out what are your weaknesses so you can work on those things. So this time of year, you know what to expect. And I
take
think
notes,
this-
Kim.
Yeah. Yes. 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 So I think one of our coaches in Kara Lawson was like, nah, 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 nah. We've been in this environment before.
Yeah.
We've seen, we've heard this song before, but now our song is better. We're more in tune. I have Duke winning this game. I have in my Final Four. It has been my boldest, I think, prediction of my whole entire bracket. Is it because I believe that defense? Is it because I believe that defense gets you to the Final Four? Yes. Is it because I believe that it's not that Duke can outscore LSU, but I think they can hold them enough. I just think they can hold them enough. It will require Duke, though, to score more than 70 points. Like, this is not going to be no 40-42 victory. They're going to have to score the basketball. But if you hold LSU to less than 75, to me, that is an attainable victory that you can win. That is the attainable goal that you can win. I love that you made this pick because I will be glued to my TV for this. Like, this right here is all the things, hot and cold, oil and water. Mm-hmm. Stylistically, the way the coaches are, the players on the court. I mean, they just have two totally different programs. The common theme is success.
And also, probably the two scariest coaches in this sport.
Kim scares you.
I say that with love. Like, that is like
or
that
fear.
That is fear and respect.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
they cut from the same cloth. So much respect for those two coaches. But if I was on the receiving end of a Kim Mulkey or a Kara Lawson tirade, I would cry, which is the reason why I do this and not that. But it is going to be a fascinating matchup. Even though we've already gotten it this season, it does feel like a brand new, refresh kind of perspective of that matchup. I don't hate your pick that for Duke beating LSU.
Okay.
And I think it's because I don't look much further than the team that Duke just beat. Because Duke lost to Baylor early in the season in Paris in the first game of the year. Like, if I know anything about Kara Lawson, and also I think it is the same thing with Kim Mulkey, except with South Carolina, we're not going to let the same team beat us twice. We're not going to continue to let ourselves, you know, shoot ourselves in the foot, making the same mistakes over and over again.
Yep.
I don't hate that pick. I'm not going to say that I agree with it, but I don't hate
it. That's good. That's good.
But other than that game, what do you have your eye on?
Oh, okay. Back to my Jersey girl and Hannah Hidalgo. How can you not be watching Vanderbilt and Notre Dame? If you are doing anything else on 327 at 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, other than glued to this TV, I'm sorry, but I don't trust you. Because this right here is going to be popcorn. I am looking forward to seeing two of the top five best scorers in our game right now. And Hannah and obviously Michaela Blake's. I'm looking forward to two coaches who have a lot of legacy to build. And we talk about legacies all the time, but they're two younger coaches that really can start to solidify themselves in these conversations we're having about greats, right? I think Neil Ivey getting to a fifth straight Sweet 16. Can you break that barrier and get to an Elite Eight, especially with a team that I don't think anybody would pick to get to an Elite Eight? I would be really surprised. Last year's team, you could add them in the Final Four championship game and nobody would have batted an eye because of all the talent that they had. But this year's team, they're really coming on as of late. And then Vanderbilt, I mean, all the pressure I feel like has been on them. I actually felt like pressure busted their pipe in the SEC tournament because they had done such a good job all year, but then got punched in the mouth versus Ole Miss and couldn't recover and experienced one of their worst losses of the season. I just love this from the basketball competitor scoring standpoint. We got two Jersey girls going at it, two guards that can get to the cup, that can score, that can hit from three, and probably two guards, please Jesus, that are going to have to guard each other, which is what I want to see. Like, who is going to win the battle? Will it be Hannah or Michaela? Oh, I can't wait.
Who are you picking to win that battle?
Oh, my goodness. Did you have to ask? Do I have to answer?
Of course. You brought up the question.
I looked down at my notes like I needed notes for this. Listen. Listen, Linda. Hannah just came off of a game where she had 26 points, 13 rebounds, 8 steals versus an Ohio State team that specializes in defense and in turning you over. So you would think that they would know what pressure looks like and be able to handle that. If she can get 8 steals versus the Buckeyes, I kind of think she might be locking up Michaela. I don't know. I think that's what I'm going with. I'm going with defense over anything. I think that if Notre Dame has any chance, Carolina, if they have any chance to win, Hannah has got to be frustrating Michaela. That has to happen. Otherwise, they can't possibly win. But that would be my pick.
Hannah against Ohio State. Okay, that would also turn off the comments on that one. Hannah was playing pissed off. She took that personal. Yes. And I love that. And we always, like, we know that Hannah Hidalgo has this dog in her. We know that she always plays with an edge. She is such a competitor. But it felt like this game, it was like, oh, no, keep telling me how I'm not supposed to be here, how my team's not supposed to be here. Like, keep feeding us the disrespect. I'm sure we're showing my bracket where I picked Fairfield to beat Notre Dame in the first round. I'm switching up really quickly, I promise, because that was me. You say, who would count them out? It was me. I'm guilty of it. And now I'm paying the price and I'm looking like a buffoon in the process. But Hannah Hidalgo clearly played like she was playing with something to prove.
Yeah.
That she was playing pissed off that she felt disrespected and she had something to prove. I think an interesting potential game plan for Notre Dame that we could maybe see unfold against Ohio State.
Yeah.
Jelani Cambridge had 41 points in this game.
Facts.
And they lost. Maybe Notre Dame's perspective is, look, Mikayla Blakes is going to get hers. Like, she's good for 25 blindfolded. If we let Mikayla Blakes get hers and let nobody else find rhythm, let nobody else get theirs, that's our path.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to let anyone else beat us. We know that you can beat us, but we're not going to let anyone else beat us. And we believe, you know, in our offense enough to be able to make up for it.
I love this. I love this analysis because you really wouldn't have thought that for Ohio State that would work. You know, they've got a big inside Lemula that's 6'6". And I just wouldn't have thought that she wouldn't have been a huge X factor going up against a Notre Dame team that doesn't have the size they normally do. So my first inkling as a basketball analyst is to tell you, well, Vanderbilt's got an inside punch that I think Notre Dame might have a tough time dealing with. So you're right, though. If they could neutralize that and then you let Mikayla score 40 and everybody else scores 25, they could score 70. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Now, listen. I just don't think the competitor in Hannah is letting that happen. I just don't see it. I think that she is just going to want to go out there and prove that her defense can be the difference. And to me, she is one of the few people in the country whose defense can actually be the difference. One of the few.
I think we all deserve Hannah on Mikayla. Like, we deserve that.
I've worked hard this basketball season. I'm taking it. I've worked hard this season. We've worked hard this season. We need it.
Midnight Eastern time. We're recording this podcast, okay? We have earned. We've eaten our vegetables. Now we've earned our dessert. Please give us Hannah on Mikayla.
I need it. Let's go.
Out of eye drops. My Keurig pods are getting depleted. Having 6 cups of coffee a day. Woo. But that's what we have earned. 1,000%. Ice, any final thoughts on what we've seen so far in the last 2 rounds or in any matchups that we have upcoming in the Sweet 16?
Yes, just 2 quick notes here. I will be in Dallas and Fort Worth for Fort Worth 3. So I have the Sweet 16 game between Texas and Kentucky on Westwood One Radio. So I'm looking forward to that. It's a Texas team that just obviously won convincingly to get to the Sweet 16, but Madison Booker just dropped 40-0. Like the number after 3-4-4-0. And so I'm excited to see her score the basketball. I'm excited to see what Kentucky can do. Obviously, that's an SEC foe. And so it's a team you're comfortable with, which this time of year makes for interesting matchups because it's not really surprising. And then South Carolina and Oklahoma. That is also a rematch of the only conference loss that South Carolina has had this season. You reminded me of that earlier today. Yeah. And so I just remember watching overtime of that game and seeing Aaliyah Chavez go off 3 after 3 after 3 after 3. Believe she hit 4 of them in a row. One of the best freshmen in the country. So the SEC with 6 teams in the Sweet 16, obviously huge representation. I don't think there's any surprise there, to be quite honest. But those are the 2 games that I'm – the other 2 games that I'm like, oh, matchups, drama, storylines, drama.
All the storylines, all the drama. And sometimes I'm anti-rematch. Like, I've already seen this game before. I don't need to see it again. Those are 2 examples that I think that I want the rematches.
Yes.
Like, give me Oklahoma, South Carolina, because you know how pissed off that locker room is going to be, how much bulletin board material Dawn Staley is going to be collecting to remind everyone of how they felt embarrassed in OT losing to Oklahoma. Again, like you mentioned, the only regular season conference loss that South Carolina has suffered. And then anytime I can see Madison Booker do literally anything is must-see.
Sign me up. What they say, praise the Lord and hook them.
What did I just do with my hands? I just spazzed out with my hands. Hook them. It's not easy to do. Comes second nature to you Texans, but to me, I'm still getting acclimated. We mentioned some great matchups. UNC UConn also gets the action started on Friday. We've also got Minnesota and UCLA. You mentioned Oklahoma, South Carolina, Kentucky, and Texas. Those two matchups on Saturday. And then Louisville and Michigan and Virginia, TCU. Virginia, the 10 seed, making their way to the Sweet 16. Those games will round out the action on Saturday. So we'll have instant reaction on sports.yahoo.com all week long. We will also have our instant reactions right after all of the action next week, right here on Hoops 360. So make sure you subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. Check us out on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. If you have a thought, if you disagree, if you have a question, leave a comment below. We are always here for you. She is Ice Young. Catch her on CBS, doing great breakdowns at the desk all tournament long. I am Caroline Fenton. Appreciate y'all for stopping by. We'll talk to you soon.